another interesting connection is that they also considered Michael Keaton to play Koopa. So.
Hmm. After the credits roll, there's always more to tell. Especially when the video sales are doing really well. From Shock Treatment to Jason X to Police Academy 6. This is Sequel Cast. And they are unsurpassed at following a franchise until the bitter end. This is Sequel Cast. And your hosts have asked that I inform you that the show will now begin.
Where are we?
I got a feeling we're not in Brooklyn no more.
They're brothers. They're plumbers.
Oh, no. Not yet. Luigi!
They're on the trail of a kidnapped princess and a mystical meteorite.
It's incredible!
That gives anyone who possesses it the power to rule the universe.
Get me the rock!
Come and get it, lizard breath!
Now, they must rescue the princess.
Luigi! Alien species escaping.
And make it safely back.
Later,
alligator, to our world.
Are you alright?
Before time runs out.
Save him!
Super Mario Brothers. This ain't no game.
Hello and welcome to the Sequel Cast. This is a Sequel Cast special episode where we can talk about things that are not movie sequels. Most of the time the show is about talking about sequels, one sequel at a time. You can check us out at sequelcast.com. And our theme song is by Mark with the C. You can check out his music at markwiththec.com. But in this Sequel Cast special episode, we're taking a look at the Super Mario Brothers live action movie that was released in 1993, directed by Rocky Morton, Anibal Jenkel, written by Parker Bennett, Terry Runte, and Ed Solomon, based very, very loosely on the video game for the Nintendo Entertainment System, starring Bob Hoskins, John Leguizamo, Dennis Hopper, and Samantha Mathis, music by Alan Silvestri, the cinematographer is Dean Semler. Off a budget of $48 million, it made around $20.9 million, but, you know, that's not counting how it did on video, DVD, and so forth. And it doesn't count marketing in there either, really. With me, I have a very special guest. It is Stephen Applebaum. He is the head editor and public relations manager for the Super Mario Brothers The Movie Archive website, which you can check out at smbmovie.com. Stephen, welcome to the Sequel Cast.
Hi, I'm glad I could be here with you guys.
Oh, sure. Not a problem. So I guess we can start. What made you, were you the person that started the Super Mario Brothers Movie Archive website to begin with, or how did you get involved with all that?
Well, I had, you know, grown up and seen the movie. I'd always loved the games. And as I got older, I kind of had vague memories of what happened. So I decided to look into it, see if there was any kind of information about the movie. And there really wasn't, other than this website, which had been founded by Ryan Haas. So I ended up joining the forums, and it was somewhat active, but there had been no updates in at least a few months, coming on a full year. So I just kind of pestered him around to see if he was going to do anything new. But, you know, life had gotten ahead of him. He didn't have time to do a lot of these things, even though he wanted to. So I took it upon myself to contact Mojo Nixon, who played the character Toad in the film, and set up an interview with him. Since then, I've been able to contact pretty much everybody who worked on the film in some regard, and we've been interviewing them and updating the site almost weekly for the last 2 years.
That's great. Yeah, and I mean, the website, again, at smbmovie.com, has so many great behind-the-scenes interviews, as well as early versions of the screenplay that are much different from the movie itself. You can see how it sort of turned from sort of a more fantasy film into more science fiction as those drafts go on.
And you've recently been doing some of the 19th anniversary screenings of the movie?
Yes, we have. We really wanted to do something special for the 20th anniversary, but we just had no idea how successful such a thing would be. So we felt it would be a good thing to do something a year ahead of time and just kind of get the word out there and let people know that we are going to start doing this.
Pretty cool. And so you were at the, were you at the screening at the New Art in Los Angeles?
Yes, I was. I drove about 6 hours to get there on time on the day of.
Hmm. Are you going to be at any of the other screenings, or is anyone from the Super Mario Brothers and the Movie Archive website going to be at those screenings as well? Or?
Well, we've had screenings in New York City and then Los Angeles. And at the end of the week, we're holding one in Seattle and one in Wilmington, which is where the movie was shot. My partner, Ryan Haas, he lives in North Carolina, so he is going to be driving to Wilmington and hosting that himself.
And it should be noted, the movie, a lot of it was shot in Wilmington, North Carolina, right?
Yes, almost everything was shot in Wilmington. They did a few shots afterwards in New York City, but that's just to establish things. Everything else, Wilmington, North Carolina.
Pretty cool. Yeah, I'm trying to think about when I first saw this live-action Super Mario Brothers movie. I had just moved to the Atlanta, Georgia area from northern Virginia, sort of like Centerville, Virginia, the metro, kind of up really close to D.C., around Dulles Airport, that sort of thing. And so I just moved to a new city and just started finishing up fifth grade, I think, at the time, because it was 93. And I went with my dad to see the Super Mario Brothers movie. And afterwards, I walked out of it, and when I was younger, I didn't like it as much, but the more I've watched it as I've gotten older, I've gotten to appreciate it a bit more. It's a movie that kind of grows on you. I think if you go into it expecting, oh, it's going to be just like the video game, or it's going to be like the Saturday morning cartoon, you might be a bit disappointed or blindsided. I mean, it's very much its own thing, and you look at all the video game movies they've made over the years, from Mortal Kombat to Resident Evil or Double Dragon, and it's very few of them that are memorable, but I think Super Mario Brothers is one of those memorable video game films.
I would definitely have to agree. It kind of didn't find its place until more video game adaptations came out, and you can see that although it's not the best, it's certainly not the worst, and that really helps in appreciating it.
So when you first saw the Super Mario Brothers live-action movie, were you in school at the time? Did you see it with your family, with some friends, on video?
I was too young. I was about, you know, 3 when it came out, and
Until
a few years later when my mother, who knew I was really into the games, decided to record it off of TV, because they used to air it a lot back then, especially on the Disney Channel. So I used to watch it on VHS.
Okay, but you were familiar with the video game beforehand?
Yes, I started out with the Super Mario World on the Super Nintendo, and after that I kind of backtracked and started with the original, and then Super Mario Brothers 2.
Is there one of those Mario Brothers video games that you've played over the years that have really stuck out to you? One of your favorites?
Well, Super Mario World was always my favorite, but over the years I've kind of come to see it as a little easier. It isn't as memorable as Super Mario Brothers 3 or even 2. So I think they all have something to offer. It just really depends on what you played first.
Right. I think for me, the first of those video games I played was the Super Mario Brothers for the Nintendo Entertainment System. And although I don't think that's my favorite, I think I probably like Super Mario Brothers 3 for the Nintendo the most. I just think it really had a neat variety of settings between especially the world where all the enemies are giant and you're kind of small. It was really something special for the time. Although recently, my wife and I played the Super Mario Brothers Wii, where you can have people playing it, multiple people at the same time. And that one's pretty fun. I think that one's very, very easy compared to some of the older games. But It's ultimately one of those classic games you can just pick up and play, and it's nice and simple, and there's not a complex storyline. You can just kind of go into it and enjoy it for what it is. And with the Super Mario Brothers movie, I guess we can start about talking about some of the different screenplays in the development process you have available on your website at smbmovie.com. It's interesting to see what sort of things have stuck with the different drafts of the script, where, you know, even the concept of an orphan being dropped off at a church and being raised by nuns is in a very early version of the script you have on there. And yet other things are kind of different.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to the screenplay writing, there's always going to be different iterations, but you always have to pay the writers to come up with new things. So when the producers commission a new writer, they want things to stay the same. They don't want to change everything. So the opening is typically what they keep the same because that's what they feel is going to be the cheapest to, you know, remain.
Right. And if you want to check out some of those early versions of the script, which I think are worth a read, I mean, it's an interesting idea to what might have been, or, you know, who knows. You can go to smbmovie.com and they get a link at top pre-production, and then you click on scripts. So that's a pretty easy way to look at those. So with the Super Mario Brothers movie, I was doing some research on it, and there was other people they had originally cast, at least for Mario, or people they were talking about. They were talking about Tom Hanks. Even Dustin Hoffman was considered for the part of Mario.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think of... Oh, go on.
Well, we haven't personally heard confirmation on those particular casting choices, but we trust the research that went into it.
Right. I heard about both of those from a book. I think it's called Game Over. I'm not sure, but it's about the history of Nintendo and Super Nintendo. And I'll look up the title.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name of it right now, but...
Well, they definitely went through a lot of casting choices, or at least people they wanted. Originally, obviously they were considering Danny DeVito for the role of Mario. Mm. And a lot of people don't know this, but they actually were considering Arnold Schwarzenegger for the role of Koopa.
Oh, wow. Really? Huh.
It actually got to a point where they were actually designing Koopa's designs off of Schwarzenegger's actual appearance.
Hmm. That would have been very interesting. And, a few years later, he played a bad guy in the Batman and Robin movie as Mr. Freeze. So him as Koopa, certainly I think might have been more physically a threatening presence than Dennis Hopper. Although Dennis Hopper is a great actor, absolutely in his own way. That is very interesting.
Another interesting connection is that they also considered Michael Keaton to play Koopa. So there's a lot of different ties to different actors who would eventually be in Batman, from, you know, Danny DeVito, Keaton, and Schwarzenegger.
Right. And I looked this up. The book I was talking about that made mention of Tom Hanks and Dustin Hoffman reportedly being considered for the part of Mario was called Game Over, Press Start to Continue by David Sheff.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an interesting look at video game history, and specifically Nintendo's history in general, up to a certain point. Watching this film for this episode of Sequel Cast, I hadn't seen this the whole way through in probably 5 or 6 years, even though I enjoy the movie, I just haven't got around to rewatching it. I'm really impressed by the chemistry between Bob Hoskins as Mario and John Leguizamo as Luigi. There's a lot of heart, I think, into the relationship between the two.
Well, they really bonded over the course of the filming. The issue is that the script was never really solid. So everyone was just, after a certain point, they got tired of learning the new lines. So they would just kind of improvise things. So Hoskins and Leguizamo were doing their own thing. Fisher Stevens and Richard Edson as Iggy and Spike were doing their own thing. Everyone was doing their own thing, and they bonded over that.
Right, and I think it comes across in the film, even though, in recent interviews, Bob Hoskins has never spoken very highly of the Super Mario Brothers movie. John Leguizamo, I think, has sort of come around to it and said his kids like it, and he sort of more willing, I think, to talk about it now. So, and we have to say the budget of this at the time was $48 million. Like now, that's what they'd make a romantic comedy for. But at the time in '93, Jurassic Park, the budget was like $63 million, not so much than the $48 million it cost to make Super Mario Brothers. This was a very, very expensive movie at the time, and part of that was due to the shooting process taking a very long time for the film.
Another thing that comes into play with the budget is that they spent $10 million into the fantasy production.
Wow.
They designed all these fantasy creatures. They designed sets. They paid for scripts. They put $10 million into that, and when that didn't work out, they had to take $10 million out of everything they eventually did do. So the budget is actually $10 million less than what you would think.
That's fascinating. And although part of me wonders what it would have been like, you know, based on the older scripts with the sort of fantasy take on it. In a way, I don't think it would have been. The fact that it sort of has this Blade Runner style production design, it's like Blade Runner meets Ghostbusters or something. It is, I think, because it's this weird science fiction stuff, and it so loosely resembles the video game Super Mario Brothers, if at all, I think that's what makes it more memorable. And had Super Mario Brothers, the movie, not been one of the first video game movies, and had it maybe, you know, not even been based on the video game at all, had it been called, like, Dino City or something, I think people would be a lot less hard on it.
Because I have to agree there. It just stands on its own, but when you compare it to the games, you can't help but make all these parallels and see what is different. And that's really the problem people have when they look at films like this.
I agree. Sometimes you just sort of have to let that go, and it's hard because Super Mario Brothers, it's right there in the title. Mm-hmm. But if you can just enjoy it for what it is and kind of not take it so seriously, I think you'll have a better time watching it. In fact, as I was watching the movie this afternoon, I sent a tweet out to John Leguizamo asking him why didn't he have a mustache in the movie, and he actually responded surprisingly. He said, "I know, what was up with that? I told them," and then it cuts off, but I'm guessing he's saying he told the directors or producers that he wanted to have a mustache in the part to be like the game, and they didn't want that. I guess maybe because you would have had two lead actors with mustaches in a film that makes them look older in a film that is supposed to appeal to kids. Although in the video game, they always have mustaches. You never see them without the mustaches.
Well, in the video games, they're also, at least in the earlier games, they're the very same height and the very same build. They didn't really get those different features until later on. And who wants a carbon copy? Who wants identical twins with the same personality?
That's true. And you do have a blend of sort of a romantic comedy sort of plot with Luigi and Daisy. And you have a bit of romance, too, with Mario in the film and his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
But you sit back, you look at the movie, and what's a scene that really jumps out to you, Steven?
I have to say my favorite scene is actually the very first one with Daisy's mother being chased by Koopa.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't realize this, at least on the very first viewing, but Daisy's mother is actually played by Samantha Mathis as well.
Oh, wow.
They just did a lot of makeup work on her to make her look more alien and set her apart. It's very high eyeshadow and long eyelashes, just to make her look different, but not exactly disconnected from Daisy herself.
Right. I mean, it's a very atmospheric scene. You get the thunder and the lightning. You get Daisy's mother running off in the shadows. You get a basket laid in front of a church. It's certainly the least thing you're expecting from the opening of a Super Mario Brothers movie. I mean, I guess aside before that, you have the little cartoon with the dinosaur in the beginning.
Yes, which was commissioned way after the movie was finished because the producers felt that people didn't really understand the concept of dinosaurs in a parallel dimension, because you have to realize, before Jurassic Park, dinosaurs weren't as popular as they are now.
Right, and also you look at that, I think a problem I have with that sequence, though, is had that not been in there, the whole parallel dimension thing would have been a bit more of a surprise, even though it's foreshadowed in the TV show Luigi watches in the beginning.
Exactly.
And having it all spell out for you, it's like, okay, this alternate dimension stuff is great, but they don't even get to it in the movie until like halfway through, more or less. So it is a bit off-putting. And the animation for the dinosaurs doesn't look great, frankly.
Not at all.
So, although I do like in the very opening credits how they play the Super Mario Brothers music from the movie.
I have an interesting story for that.
Okay.
One of the VFX designers, Brian Jennings, he actually pitched an alternate title sequence which would have been inspired by Donkey Kong.
Hmm.
It would have featured the Super Mario Brothers title, but it would have been composed of actual in-construction steel towers, and it would have, you know, shifted angles until slowly these skyscrapers would reveal Super Mario Brothers.
That would have been a lot more, I think, clever than that you just sort of get text on a black background. But then that's very interesting, Stephen. Thank you.
Well, they really wanted to do a lot of things, but either because time or budget or just creative differences, they couldn't do it all. And it's a shame that what we did get are, you know, this animated intro, which does not set the movie off on the right feeling. It just doesn't get you into what this movie is supposed to be about.
Right. I think one scene in the movie that really made me smile when I watched it again recently is later in the film, after they get the necklace with the meteorite part on it, and Mario and Luigi are finally in costumes that look like something from the game.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's totally random that they run across these outfits to change into that look like what's in the video game.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know, just having that visual on screen and live action with real actors doing it in a big budget movie, it was a real thrill for me as a kid and even today.
Mm-hmm. And the designs aren't completely off base. People usually criticize them for not being exactly overalls or, you know, just not having the right palette. But they have become popular in and of themselves. They're almost comparable to the Ghostbusters jumpsuits. We get on the site emails and photos from people all the time cosplaying as either Mario or Luigi in these exact jumpsuits.
Wow, yeah. I mean, it goes to show it's certainly a movie that's been around. And I think it did. Do you have any idea of how well this did on video and DVD sales? Or
I honestly can't tell you, although we do know that on Amazon it is top 5,000 in a few categories and it is bestseller. So it's usually recommended on Amazon. And it's not a bad price. It used to be about $5, but the reviews have actually been going up. It used to be about 3 out of 5 stars, and now it's 4 stars, so the price has gone up, and I think that's a great sign, is that, you know, people have demonstrated that they like the movie, so they're wanting to sell it more.
Right, and I am hoping that leads towards an eventual Blu-ray release. Blu-ray is a format I enjoy, and it's been around for long enough now. We're getting to see all sorts of stuff released on there.
Well, we are in touch with the film's producers and the directors, as well as, you know, the original writer, Parker Bennett. And many of the people we've spoken to have expressed interest in getting the movie out on a new release, updating the picture quality, and even incorporating deleted scenes.
Hmm.
They filmed over 30 minutes of deleted scenes, most of which either better explained the concept, had more dinosaurs, more game enemies, and just had a lot more heart between Mario and Luigi, because they had an actual arc where they kind of didn't like each other at first, but towards the end, they became better brothers. And they cut all of this out. The footage is still out there, and many of the people we've spoken to want to put it back in.
That'd be really interesting if that happened. Yeah, because in the film, the relationship between Mario and Luigi is Mario kind of is almost like a father figure to Luigi and watches over him and gives him advice. But you certainly don't get any hint of fighting between the two or anything like that. So
right.
That would be very interesting to see.
What was supposed to happen was that Mario was older. He was like anywhere between 15 and 18 when his father had remarried and they had a new child, which is his younger brother, Luigi.
Mm.
And his father and stepmother ended up dying. So he was forced to take care of Luigi just as he was about ready to go into the world himself as an adult. So he does view himself as a father figure, and he always resented him for this. It was this adventure and what happens throughout it where they would actually become closer.
Yeah, pretty cool. I hope we get to see those scenes on an eventual re-release of the film. You had mentioned something in our chatting we were doing before the show about some sort of a sequel comic.
Definitely, definitely. After we were fortunate enough to interview Parker Bennett, who was part of the writing team with Terry Runte, they wrote the original science fiction script, and although they were let go, they ended up being brought back on, and they did final rewrites. We were able to interview him, and he, in private discussions later on, we discussed, you know, the foundation of the world, how the characters came to be, their motivations, and, you know, the history of the parallel world. And using that, we've been working with him to do kind of script a sequel comic that we would like to pitch to, you know, Nintendo, because Nintendo owns merchandising rights for the film.
Now, speaking of merchandising, was there a lot of merchandising with the film done at the time?
There was a lot. We are still discovering merchandise. They had promotional plungers. They had a promotional wrench-shaped pencil, which really isn't that functional because the eraser would be facing the stem itself. obviously, they had the toy line. We recently discovered that they had additional toys that they did not release. They had an alternate Koopa figure with a dinosaur face. They had an unbelievable amount of merchandising for this film. I'm not sure if it sold back then, but you see these figures on eBay all the time. They routinely sell anywhere from $50 to $100.
Wow. Yeah, I think certainly, if not the movie, certainly the Mario character has lasted throughout the years, and that would drive that up in demand. But it's really interesting. There's a lot of toys that weren't produced for the film. You know, around the time when the film came out, I don't recall any toys in the stores, but then at the time I was like 11 or 12. I don't think I was getting action figures at that time in my life. So I wasn't really looking for them at the time either.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, we can go back to talk about the film a bit. What do you think about Dennis Hopper as King Koopa? Academy Award-winning Dennis Hopper.
It's a very inspired casting choice. A lot of people don't expect it. He's not physically imposing. If you cast Arnold Schwarzenegger, for example, you could buy that in a human form. But Hopper, he plays better as an intellectual or a sociopath, and a lot of people don't see that kind of characterization with Koopa, and that's very daring. It works well for what they were trying to do.
And the one thing that really strikes me as strange is his hair in the movie, where it's this bleach blonde and kind of back in spikes. Maybe it's trying to resemble the look of a spines on the back of a T-Rex or something, or a dinosaur maybe. It's also trying to make him look younger with having it dyed blonde.
Yeah. Another thing they did is he has a lot of facial scars. That was all makeup. And another thing most people don't immediately realize is that he does not have eyebrows.
Oh. Huh.
They shaved them off completely because they thought it would give him a more alien look. And it does, but you just don't know why at a first glance.
I'll have to take a look for that next time I see the film. I didn't even notice that this time. That's pretty interesting. I think, you know, he is really great actor. It's impressive they're able to get someone of his stature in Hollywood and with his history into the movie in a big part. And I believe I had read in a book somewhere that he took the part because his kids really liked the video game.
That is true of Bob Hoskins. Dennis Hopper said on a talk show that he took the role because he needed to buy his son shoes.
Huh. Well, I imagine whatever it is they paid him, he could have afforded a lot of different shoes. Or maybe just one pair of really expensive shoes.
Right.
It's interesting. You have some characters in this film that have name of characters from the video game, but yet they don't really resemble those characters at all. Such right. as Iggy and Spike, which are names of some of Bowser's children, the Koopa kids. Mm-hmm. And then you have Toad, who is this kind of roly-poly fat helper guy from the games.
Toad is a really interesting character. He changed the most out of any other throughout all the scripts.
Why do you think that was?
He was actually almost a third protagonist. He was originally supposed to follow them all the way to the end as a human character, but they just kept cutting him down or bringing him back, and I just think they didn't want to detract focus on the Mario Brothers.
Right, and yeah, in some ways, I find that they use names like Iggy, Spike, and Toad from the video games that are recognizable as one thing and have them show up as something else can be a bit distracting. Again, if you're expecting it to be a lot like the video game. But on the other hand, it's a neat surprise. You know, I mean, the Super Mario Brothers movie is nothing if not unpredictable. I mean, who would imagine this movie based on a video game about obese plumbers going through a fantasy land where they can throw fires at mushrooms would be this sort of dystopian science fiction dinosaur reptile people adventure. It's such a difficult movie to describe, really.
Well, it really was meant to be a prequel to the games. They said this time and again in promotional interviews and in the making of documentary that it was just supposed to be a prequel to explain how they became the Super Mario Brothers. The original scripts all meant to end the film with the world coming back to life, and it would be a lush primordial jungle with piranha plants and all these other creatures.
Wow, that might have, yeah. That kind of makes more sense. And the ending that's in the movie, you know, teases a sequel, but you have no idea where it would go. Where Daisy comes back from the other dimension and says, oh, you got to come, you got to help me. And she has a gun and she smiles.
And that really has been a hard workaround for us in approaching a sequel, especially it being 20 years later.
Right. I think it, I don't know whether you would set it at the same, you know, take off right when the movie lets off or make it be a few years later and they stumble across the portal again. I mean, one thing I found really interesting, I just only had time to read a bit of the beginning of the fantasy version of the script, or the really early draft of the screenplay, which you can read along with a lot of the other ones over at your site, smbmovie.com. And the setup in that version and how the Mario Brothers get to the alternate dimension is they're fixing a leak at the church where Daisy was dropped off as a baby, although I think in that version her name is Hilda or something.
Hildy.
And I think that was that could have been maybe an interesting way to go for the film, but it's just really neat reading those different scripts and seeing what things stayed through and what things didn't and how different some of the versions were. So in other versions of the script or as far as deleted scenes go, was there more stuff dealing with the Scapelli brothers?
There was.
Okay.
They actually filmed a scene where Mario and Luigi would go into the diner itself and kind of fight for the job. And the Scapelli brothers, or Doug and Mike, they worked for Scapelli himself, and the restaurant owner, Pascal, would kind of have to side with them because obviously they work for the mob and he doesn't want to deal with that. And this actually led into an alternate scene where they met Daisy. He would instead offer them a free lunch. So Mario and Luigi would be eating lunch in the restaurant, making fun of the Scapelli brothers not doing their job very well. And Daisy would come in to use the payphone in the restaurant, and she would end up sliding on water leaking out of the dish room. Luigi would catch her in his arms, and they would lock eyes and have kind of a moment, and then it would go from there.
Hmm. Right. I mean, it's the way it's in the movie now, it's a bit weird, because you get the setup in the beginning where the Scapellis are their big, kind of one sort of bad guy introduced early on, and then, but they're not a continual threat throughout the film, because they're in the alternate dimension. And when they come back and there's the payoff, oh, we turned one of the Scapellis into a monkey, for me at least, it kind of came out of nowhere, because you almost forgot who these characters were after all these science fiction adventures with the dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes sense what you said, in that they filmed more scenes with them and different plans with those characters originally. What did you think of Samantha Mathis as Princess Daisy?
I will give her that she is a very lovely woman.
Yeah.
And you can buy her as a princess, but she just did not act the role very well, and she has admitted this much. The one interview she gave on the film, she said that she didn't really have to act. She just reacted. And I think that's really a shame. The problem is that she was young and she was working on two other films at the same time between partying late at night. You really do get the sense that she's about to fall asleep through most of her scenes.
I mean, it doesn't help with her character that they have her doing a lot early on, and then for most of the movie, she's in a room with all the other female characters sort of trapped. So, I agree in that. I think she's okay, but they also didn't give her a lot to work with, and although they try and set up that Luigi is head over heels in love with her, I never got the feeling as to why that's the case, and I'm sure there's more deleted scenes with that sort of stuff.
She's actually the one character who doesn't really have any other deleted scenes.
Really? Okay. Wow. One thing with this movie that I think really holds up well is a lot of the design of the creatures in the film. How Yoshi look and the Goombas. It's very distinct. In fact, a lot of people have been joking the lizard in the upcoming Amazing Spider-Man movie looks like the Goombas from the Mario Brothers movie.
I've seen that so many times, and I can see a slight resemblance, but it's a dinosaur person. There's going to be scales. What are you going to do?
Right. I think it's the scales. I think also maybe the color of the scale, skin, whatever you'd call it. But it's not as close, I think, as people say it is, but it's an amusing coincidence nonetheless. And things like the Goombas, you had to make it look really different than the video game. I cannot imagine life-size mushroom people with big eyes and feet walking around.
Well, one thing people have to realize is that Nintendo had almost zero involvement in how the film turned out. They gave the production a list of character names, and that was it.
Wow.
So the writers, they pretty much had to play the games themselves and get a grasp of what particular themes and visuals there were. And if you play the original Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers 3, or Super Mario World, the Goombas are all twice as tall as regular Mario and equal in height to Super Mario. And that's all they had to go on, is to assume that they were really tall. They did not have any promotional images that showed Goombas right next to Mario to give a kind of size comparison.
Huh. And the other thing also with the older video games, like you said, Mario 1, 3, and Super Mario World, is that those games, compared to video games now, those games have pretty much a non-existent story.
Exactly.
You didn't have a lot of deep characters or 30-minute long video sequences between levels. You were just going from level to level, trying to get a high score, trying to beat the game, and when you beat the game, you just get a picture saying congratulations, and the game reset itself.
Right.
So, I mean, just that they had to go from the game alone is crazy, and I think even that this Super Mario Brothers movie even got made with all the script changes and all the money they put into it early on is something of a miracle in and of itself.
They did the best they could. It very easily could have just given up, but everyone thought this was going to be a good thing, and they put everything they had into it. It's just a shame that they couldn't do more with the time and money that they had, and it just wasn't promoted well. It had very stiff competition, and people didn't know what to expect.
Right, and also being... Exactly. I think expectations is a hard thing to do with it, because not only, I mean, Super Mario Brothers was one of the first real high profile movies based off a video game. And it was a big unknown. People didn't know what they were going into. And I think that the thing that really sticks out to me is even to this day, how many movies based off video games can you think of that are family movies, that are kids movies?
Right.
There's this one, Super Mario Brothers.
Mario Brothers.
I don't know if I can think of another one. You get a lot
Resident
of...
Resident Evil is kind of family-based. I know a lot of families like to see zombies.
Yeah, no, zombies are big, and you get... if it's not Resident Evil, most of the video game stuff is based off fighting games like Kingdom Fighters or Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat.
Mm-hmm.
But that even, 19 years later, as of this recording in June 2012... that there hasn't really been another big live-action video game movie aimed at families, I think, is really interesting.
And I feel like that's about to change soon with Disney's Wreck-It Ralph.
Right. And Wreck-It...
You have so many video game characters in that were licensed from an unbelievable amount of companies, and... It's just amazing that they allowed that to happen, especially Disney, because Disney has Bowser in there. That's one. And it's amazing that they would let even just that slide.
Right. You get to see that in the trailer for Wreck-It Ralph. And Wreck-It Ralph, for listeners that may not know, is a movie that Disney is coming out with, I believe, this November. And It looks basically like a Who Framed Roger Rabbit kind of thing, but dealing with video games. About a character called Wreck-It Ralph who's in a game a lot like Donkey Kong, where he plays the bad guy, and he decides he doesn't want to be the bad guy anymore, and kind of hops between these different video game worlds, trying to find his place, trying to find who he is. But yeah, the trailer for that features this and it's an animated CG movie, I'd like to add. But the trailer shows this magnificent, crazy scene, like you said, Steven, and not only does it have Bowser from Super Mario Brothers, it has Dr. Robotnik from Sonic the Hedgehog. It has Zangief from Street Fighter. It has Q-Bert is in a scene in the trailer. And I wonder if there's just going to be a bunch of video game characters in one scene or if they're going to be all throughout the movie. That I'm not sure about. But
I have heard that there are more references that you see Sonic later on, for example.
Okay, well, I mean, yeah, Wreck-It Ralph is certainly a movie I'm looking forward to, and you're right. I think other than that, and Super Mario Brothers, between those two films, I can't think of any other video game movies aimed at a family audience. So that's pretty interesting. You were mentioning a bit in our chat before the show, Steven, something about a documentary?
Yes. We felt that with all the interviews we were pulling together that we might as well try to shoot a documentary on the production and sort of pitch that to Disney on a potential new re-release. We have spoken with producers Roland Jaffe and Jake Eberts and directors Rocky Morton and Annabelle Jankel, and all four of them are interested in being in such a documentary. Jake Eberts, one of the producers, he is talking to Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo for us. So it's looking like we might get basically all the top tier people who made this movie into what it is.
Wow, I think that's pretty exciting. And would it be something that would be made only if it was for an upcoming re-release, or?
We are doing this because of our own interest in this story that we feel needs to be told. So if it does not end up being on a re-release, we would still put it out there on YouTube or wherever else for people to watch and hopefully come to appreciate the movie more.
Well, great. I wish you the best of luck with that. That sounds really interesting. You know, some of the most interesting documentaries I've seen about the making of films have been with films that didn't quite connect with audiences at the time. I'm thinking of, there was a really good documentary on Highlander 2, The Quickening, and there's also one on Star Trek 5, The Final Frontier.
Mm-hmm.
And when they talk about, you know, movie shoots that have these problems, whether it be casting or script problems, but they're things that people end up liking in the end many years later after the fact. I think it ends up being a much more interesting story than a typical documentary where they might say, oh, working with everyone was great and it's such a good time and everyone was so funny.
Mm-hmm.
So I certainly wish you guys over at smbmovie.com luck with that. It sounds very interesting.
We appreciate that and hope it turns out well.
So out of all the interviews you've done on smbmovie.com, is there one that sticks out to you as being either like a favorite or, you know?
I personally enjoy the interview with Parker Bennett, the writer, because he is just so heartfelt about writing for the film. He and his partner, Terry Runte, they were really passionate about making this movie into something special, and they gave the impression that the directors didn't care so much for faithfulness to the games, but they did. They were trying to slip in all these different references. They had phone booths that Mario would kind of punch and coins would fly out. They just had everything they could to try to make it as close to the games as they could. And in the end, you know, they were let go and they couldn't control it after that point. And, you know, his interview was dedicated to his partner, Terry, who was murdered later that year.
Mm.
It's just a very touching thing to be able to read this from a man who was broken at one point, but came back and it is really happy to share the story now.
Neat. Yeah. Pretty interesting. I'll have to post a link to that on the SequelCast Facebook page. There's just so much great content. I literally spent, you know, this past Saturday, I went to the smbmovie.com website to check it out, and I spent a few hours only meaning to spend a few minutes just because of all the great interviews and forums and all these things you have on there. It's a really amazing amount of stuff you've rounded up on there. So with Super Mario Brothers, looking back on it all these years, if you were to try to convince someone to watch it that was really skeptical of it, what would you say?
You know, there's just so many preconceived notions out there about it, and it just seems to be the popular opinion that it is not good and you should avoid it. And I've seen so many people say, yeah, I heard that movie's bad, but they haven't seen it themselves. At the same time, I've seen other people comment, I must be the only person who likes this movie. It's just something you need to give a chance. It's not going to be exactly like the games, but they made an effort. They tried to put something special together, and there's certain elements that you will enjoy. It sticks out as a 90s film. It has that kind of aesthetic, has that same comedic sensibility as Ghostbusters or anything from that period. You just need to look at it in that frame of mind, and I'm sure there's something that will stand out and be enjoyed.
Right. I agree. I think it's a movie that if you haven't seen it in a while, I should give it another shot and just try to sit back and relax and try and let as much of the notions of the video game go, even though that can be tough given that it's called Super Mario Brothers and deals with Mario and Luigi. Even just looking at it from a technical aspect, from the costumes, from the sets. I mean, the set for the city is really quite impressive in scope and reminded me a bit, not only of Blade Runner, but a little bit of the original Total Recall film with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Well, the cities were designed by David L. Snyder, who is most well known for being the art director on Blade Runner.
Oh, how about that? Oh. Okay.
And the costumes were designed by Joseph Porro, who did costume designs for a lot of films. He did Stargate, for example. And they won some award for the costume designs. And one thing that people don't really realize is so excellent about the film is the visual effects. They were doing things that had never been done before on systems that were not even released to the public yet. Everything in the film was revolutionary, groundbreaking work. That scene where it pans over the parallel world into Daisy in the tower, that took over 5 months of work from one person.
Wow.
They were actually a potential nominee for the VFX Oscar that year. What ended up happening was Disney really wanted A Nightmare Before Christmas to get a nominee for that award. And it really shouldn't have, because it was stop motion. It wasn't visual effects. It was a completely different category. But it's Disney, and they lobbied very hard, which pushed Super Mario Brothers from third place to fourth. So it wasn't nominated at all.
Yeah, that's too bad. I mean, also, at the time, there was not a separate category in the Oscars for Best Animated Film.
Exactly.
And maybe that could have been a reason for that as well. So, as we round up our discussion here on the sequel cast on the Super Mario Brothers live-action movie, is there anything you want to bring up that we haven't talked about?
Well, I just appreciate being given the opportunity to talk about the film. It's something that has come up a lot over the last few years. People are getting more interested in it. And we just like knowing that we are the one site that has all of this content that people can read and enjoy. It's somewhere that, you know, people can discover that they're not the only ones who enjoy the film or at least curious about it.
Right. I noticed, you know, there's been stories featuring your website, smbmovie.com, on Kotaku not too long ago, and The Escapist, mm-hmm. and things like that. So that's great. It's getting all this exposure, and you're doing this run of the film for the 19th anniversary screenings. Mm-hmm. And can you describe for a minute what it was like getting to see it? Had you seen the movie in the big screen before going to this L.A. screening?
I had not. So it was something I was looking forward to. I did not realize it would be such a different experience than what you can see on video.
Yeah.
It was almost a completely different film.
Was there a part watching it on the big screen that you think the audience seemed to react to the most? Is there a lot of cheers throughout the film?
There actually were. People were cheering during the kiss scenes, during when Mario and Luigi suit up. They were laughing when, you know, Mario was dancing with Big Bertha. And we had the cast and crew there. We had Parker Bennett. We had David Snyder. We had Dana Kaminsky, who played Mario's girlfriend. We had all kinds of people who worked on the movie there, and they were astonished by not only how many people came, but by how much they enjoyed it.
It's fantastic. Pretty cool. All right. I guess I don't know. I think the last things I could think to say about the Super Mario Brothers film is getting to rewatch it. It held up better than I expected. And I really enjoyed the special effects, especially on Yoshi, all the detail on that, the way he moved. And that Yoshi was not a CG character in this film.
Not at all.
Unlike some of the stuff in Jurassic Park. He was, I think, like exactly. remote control for some of it, right?
Yoshi was the last puppet-operated animatronic in any film in Hollywood. Everything was cable-operated. They had like 10 people working on the lips, the tongue, the eyelids, the muscles moving in the shoulders. It was a full puppet. But with Jurassic Park, like for the Raptors, those were only heads. So when, like, the raptors are sticking their heads through the door in the kitchen scene, there's a person behind the door operating it. There was no body. Yoshi was completely animatronic. There was no CG whatsoever to it.
Yeah, and also the look of the fungus in the film is really gross and very memorable. It's you know, and it's subtle in that you do have references to the games with the mushrooms, mm-hmm. with the little, well, the little walking, the bomb thing, look, that looks just the same as the game, but
yeah. It's funny, though, because the fungus and the bomb are the only things about the movie that everyone who made it did not like.
Huh.
They just did not get it, and they just had no idea what the directors were trying to do with it. But, you know, the fungus is a popular concept with fans of the movie. They like the idea of it. And, of course, the bomb, that connects to fans because it's exactly like the games.
Right. I think I was very pleased. I did not remember this at the time, but you had the Walk the Dinosaur song in the film.
Yes, they did.
In several movies in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. That was a last-minute song choice for that scene. They originally had the Red Hot Chili Peppers were supposed to perform as a fictional band.
Oh,
obviously that didn't work out, but yeah. It could have been interesting.
Hmm. Yeah, that would have been something different. Okay, well, Stephen, thank you very much for coming on the Sequel Cast to talk about the Super Mario Brothers movie with me. Again, you can check out your site at smbmovie.com, and you can check out episodes of the Sequel Cast over at sequelcast.com. Mm-hmm. So, for the Sequel Cast, this is Matt.
And this is Stephen of SMBMovie.com.
Saying, do the Mario? I don't know. That doesn't really work.
Trust the fungus.
Trust the fungus. There you go. Oh, I guess one last minute thing. Did you ever watch any of those cartoons growing up, the Mario Brothers cartoons on TV?
I didn't. Okay. I was too young for that.
Yeah, when I was younger, I saw the Mario Brothers 3 and the Mario Brothers World cartoon. And although they look like the video game a lot, they were very strange. I recall there was one episode of one of those where Milli Vanilli was a band guesting as themselves on an episode. But then later, when that episode was re-released on DVD, they couldn't get the music rights. And so you have these dialogue scenes of Bowser saying, like, oh, listen to Milli Vanilli playing. I can't stand the way they sound. And they cut to the band playing, and it's just playing generic music. It's not playing Milli Vanilli at all. But those cartoons are kind of funny if you run across them. All right, well, thanks again for being on the show.
You can hear SequelCast while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone. And when you download Stitcher to hear SequelCast, you have a chance to win some money. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in the App Store. Download it. It's free and takes just a few seconds. Then, during registration, hit the promo code box and enter SequelCast to get automatically entered to win $100. The latest episode of the show will always be waiting for you in your favorites. You'll get access to lots of other amazing shows, too. Always available to you on demand, no syncing. It's Stitcher Smart Radio. Don't forget to enter the promo code SequelCast when you register. Just go to Stitcher.com/SequelCast.